Should mortgage lenders be able to destroy original loan documents?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning. From American Public Media in New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. All the mortgages that brought us into this economic downturn are nothing more than pieces of paper. So you can imagine the worry associated with the outcome of two hearings today in federal court in Delaware. At issue is whether two bankrupt subprime mortgage lenders can trash thousands of boxes of original loan documents. Marketplace's Elisa Roth is with me live here in the studio in New York with more. Good morning, Elisa.
Good morning.
So what exactly are these hearings about?
Well, really, as you said, it's about the fate of thousands of boxes of documents. In one case, there are 18,000. In the other, it's around 4,000. Again, as you said, these are two similar but distinct cases we're talking about subprime mortgage lenders that went bankrupt. Now, the problem is it's expensive to store these documents. So the question is whether it's okay to get rid of them. You remember those cases where banks had to stop foreclosures because it wasn't clear they had the legal right to foreclose on those properties. Now, the original paperwork, like the ones that may be in these boxes, turned out to be very important for those cases. In at least one of these cases, the U.S. attorney's arguing that destroying these documents could threaten to impair federal law enforcement efforts. That is, the government may need some of these documents to prove whether banks have the right to foreclose on certain properties.
Elisa, do we know much more about what's in the boxes that are at issue today?
It really depends who you ask. Supposedly, all of the documents that are left are related to very old mortgages that are more than 8 years old. Other people say that's just not true. Nobody's gone over the documents properly and that they might still have important papers in them. And those could be papers investors would need if they're going to foreclose.
Marketplace's Elisa Roth here in New York. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Well, as we said, that case Elisa was talking about is being heard in a Delaware court, and that's no accident. Here to explain is Charles Elson. He's the head of the Weinberg Center for Corporate Governance at the University of Delaware, and he's with us this morning from Newark. Good morning.
Good morning.
So according to the state of Delaware's website, there are more than 850,000 business entities that have their legal home in Delaware, including more than half of all publicly traded U.S. companies. What's that all about?
Originally, most companies were incorporated in the state of New York. And around 1880, 1890, New York law changed and made it less hospitable for large companies to be there, and they moved across the river to New Jersey. And New Jersey law changed. Delaware was the next state over. And all that Delaware had was a law that simply was the old New York law, but they didn't change it.
And what is it about that law, Charles Elson, that companies like so much?
Well, it was just a very smart way of ordering relationships between investors, management, and boards of directors, and disputes would be resolved in an effective manner. But that really isn't the reason people are here today. We developed in this state a court system to resolve disputes involving that law, and the judges in that court became particularly good at resolving these disputes. And as a result, the court itself became really the reason to incorporate here as opposed to the law itself.
Are there other states that are vying to take over as the place where companies want to incorporate?
Oh, yeah. Nevada, North Dakota, for instance, have tried, but they haven't been successful. And I think it has to do, again, with this judiciary. It's considered neutral. The state itself has no business other than the effective regulation of corporations. So it's important to the state to maintain that franchise and maintain the view in the investor community that it is balanced in its approach.
What does it mean for Delaware's economy to have all these companies incorporating in the state?
About 27% of our direct revenue, tax revenue, comes from the corporations. Another significant amount comes from unclaimed dividends and whatnot. And then there's a lot of income tax that comes in from those businesses that are involved in corporate regulation. So it's very significant to the state. And that's why the state is so insistent on getting it right.
Charles Elson, head of the Weinberg Center for Corporate Governance at the University of Delaware, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Very good to be with you.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed this morning around the globe. Hong Kong is down. London is up slightly. You know what else is up slightly but not enough? The number of women attending this year's World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. It was just 16% female last year. This year, it'll be close to 20%, but organizers were hoping for 30%. On Wall Street Friday, the Dow jumped 49 points to close at 11,871.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Constant Contact Event Marketing, working to help small businesses and nonprofits make their events easier with event registration and marketing tools. ConstantContact.com. and by Progressive Insurance, helping people shop for car insurance at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com.
All right, so you probably agree that talking on your cell phone or texting while driving is dangerous. Well, sadly, even though distracted driving kills more than 5,400 people each year, not everyone has gotten the message. So the Department of Homeland Security, rather the Department of Transportation, is holding talks this week and may ask car makers to help curb the urge to talk or text and drive. From WNYC, Alex Goldmark has more.
Secretary of Transportation Ray LaHood is normally mild-mannered, but he does have a pet issue.
We've been on a rampage against distracted driving for nearly 2 years.
And he's taking that energy to Detroit tomorrow, where he'll meet with the CEOs of Ford and Chrysler. In a press conference last week, LaHood said he'd already talked with a handful of other car makers.
My meetings with the car manufacturers have given them a lot of opportunity to think about how they can be helpful to us.
One way is advertising. He thanked Subaru for a commercial that discourages teens from talking and driving. But he'll likely bring up some other ways to help, all voluntary, of course. John Ulyeski of the National Safety Council knows what he'd bring up: eliminating technological incentives to talk.
Automakers are developing products that automate the calling process. They make it easier to dial a phone. Some of them even have voice-to-text kind of systems.
But asking car makers to drop these features that attract new buyers will be a tough sell. In New York, I'm Alex Goldmark for Marketplace.
And finally, the new food safety law is going to give you something to do if you get bored at the supermarket. The law requires a digital record of exactly where food came from, and in some cases, that means consumers will be able to scan items and find out where things were grown and whether they've been recalled. I just hope I get to hear a fellow shopper pick up a product and say, "This stuff's made in New York City." Too bad we don't grow anything here in New York. I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
Patton Oswalt has a theory on the role of comedians in society and of public radio hosts.
I need you to keep the world running, and then you need me to amuse you at the end of the day when you've basically saved the world again.
I'm Kai Ryssdal. A stand-up comic makes his literary debut next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.